It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Coming up on episode number 134 of Sports Day Plus, I'm spending the hour with Kevin Dunn, talking everything from college baseball to women's basketball, the Zilker train making a comeback, and yes, even Buc-ee's. I am your host, Trey Elling. You can give me a follow on Twitter at Courtesy Wave, and do the same for ESPN Austin at 1027 ESPN. And because it is a Tuesday, it is now my pleasure to welcome for the full hour my best friend, the great Kevin Dunn. KD, what is up? How you doing this week?
Doing well, man. Very busy, but good. How about you?
Oh, doing pretty good. Just slogging through the Texas heat. This feels like what we're going to be dealing with from now until, I don't know, the end of August. We caught a little bit of a break last August, but you just have to pray at this point that the humidity is not does not have things feeling like Houston and New Orleans or Florida when you walk outside each and every day, because it is going to be getting into the mid to upper 90s, if not hotter than that, for the next 2 to 3 months.
Yeah, I mean, usually my car is covered, but you know, I had a lunch yesterday and, it was out in the sun for probably an hour and a half, and getting into it, it was, you know, unbearable. And I'm like, well, you know, it's definitely here, right?
You and I were talking the other day, and this is the first time something like this has happened to me. We were talking and I was in my car and the air conditioning was on and it was at full blast. Well, my phone was laid out on in the shotgun seat next to me, and it was exposed to the sun, and it is apparently so hot outside right now that even being in an air-conditioned car doesn't matter, because the phone completely shut off and said temperature too hot, and I had to wait for like 5 minutes before calling you back.
Yeah, I've had that a couple times, but usually because I left the phone in the car and not like with the AC on, so like that. That shows you, but yeah, I mean, it is here. It's June, so it's part of what we deal with as Texans.
Indeed, and another part of what we deal with as Texans is the College World Series, which unfortunately the Longhorns are not in this year. Texas A&M did make it back to Omaha. Congrats to them, I guess, and Coach Slosh. And the other seven teams are now in the field. I guess it's a good opportunity to get your current thoughts on where things stand between David Pierce, UT Baseball. You still feel strongly that Pierce will be gone before it's all said and done at the end of this season? And if so, if any of those top candidates have changed for you?
I mean, look, I mean, I probably have more intel than some people, but I don't know. I'm not talking to CDC. So, but yeah, I mean, it does feel like he's going to be replaced. And at that point, I think there are a lot of options. I think probably more options than there were after Augie left, to where there could be good options. And so, but if he hadn't done it yet, it doesn't mean it's not going to happen. It just probably means the guy who he wants to go get is still coaching.
Yeah, and CDC has been really good about that too, of making sure that that next person is lined up before getting rid of the current man or woman who's in charge. Because otherwise you end up with a potential sloppy situation, which is what happened with the baseball coaching search the last time around.
Right, yeah. So, yeah, two things there. He kind of operates that way, where he's done that with a lot of other hires he's made at UT. And I'm pretty sure TCU too, that he doesn't want it to linger too long. And I think, you know, combine that with the way it lingered last time and other guys got paid, kind of capitalizing on the capital that UT baseball had forever, and UT is a school and money and all that, that he definitely does not want that to happen with baseball. And so I think that'll be a quick turnaround, that if it does happen, it'll happen. And the guy will already be done at that point. And it's probably, you know, I mean, I keep on hearing different names, but there are a lot of good options. There are five or six options you could give me, and I'd be like, I'll take it.
Yeah, I heard the other day from somebody completely random. I haven't even mentioned this to you yet. You may very well have heard something similar, that the guy who is at Tennessee right now, what is his name again?
Tony Vitello.
Yeah, Tony Vitello, that...
Or Vitello.
Yeah, his dream job is supposedly University of Texas. It's that sort of rumors that you get this time of year, too. So-and-so, their dream job is UT. Are we sure about that, or is that because he's one of the hotter names in college baseball right now?
Yeah, no, he's been a great coach. I think his ethos actually relates pretty well to UT, especially as he gets older. People forget Augie. I remember him getting tossed to Cal State Fullerton in the 80s here. Like, Augie definitely matured and calmed down a little bit, and I think Tony will too. I mean, he's done an incredible job there.
Oh, you're saying he's a little bit red-assed right now, though.
Oh, my dude, he has been like, that's been a red ass program, and he is a red ass coach, like as red ass as any college coach I've ever seen in my life, Trey. And I've been watching for a long time.
Jeez, that is a sport.
No. He is a, you know, you're worried that there could be a gun involved. I think it's gotten better like over the last couple of years. And I think he's a hell of a coach and a great program builder. And if they hired him, I'm going to smile and say, you know what? Sometimes you got to let your girlfriend turn into your wife and she cools off a little bit. Right, Trey?
Yep. No argument from me there. I'm trying to think of some of the most red-ass figures in the history of baseball. I guess number one has to be Earl Weaver, right, with some of his antics back in the day?
Yeah. I mean, Earl Weaver with the hat and the kick in the dirt and some of his stuff would be right up there. Jim Leland was the guy. Lou Piniella.
Oh, yeah.
No, there have been some characters.
I have a general observation that maybe you can help me out with as somebody who used to be employed by ESPN and is a longtime lover of college baseball, because I have found myself drawn to at least seeing who is winning or losing these games throughout the regionals and then the super regionals this last weekend. And I'm sure this is going to continue into the College World Series itself. ESPN has a monopoly on college baseball postseason. So why do they make such a feeble effort to market it or make it easy for people to access information related to this tournament that is pretty much showing on its channels nonstop over the course of a couple of weekends and then, what, 10 consecutive days?
I think part of it was their concerted effort to really try and highlight women's sports. And so football is such a moneymaker that you got to do that, right? And hit that a bunch. You know, it's funny, college baseball's popularity has grown, but not on the same graph or the same level as the actual play has and the talent that's actually playing right now, which is one of the biggest problems with college basketball, is that, well, dude, you don't have, you know, if guys leave after the freshman year or don't go there at all, which will be tougher after they ban this G League Ignite thing, they can still go to Europe. They can do a lot of things. But it's more about the compound, you know, interest in this case, to where you had juniors and seniors that were five stars that, I mean, think about Tim Duncan his freshman and sophomore year compared to his junior and senior year. Well, college baseball is totally flipped. A lot of these guys are going there because they don't want to spend 5 years in Birmingham on a bus, you know, getting burgers at 2:30 a.m. flung in the bus. And so they're going to school and they can shorten that time to get the MLB and really grow. Yet the popularity and viewership, and I would say coverage maybe is, it's definitely grown, but I don't think it's been in comparison to what the actual product's been.
I very rarely have seen it on the front page over the last couple of weekends now, which is a shame, and it's hard to find scores too. You can't find scores by scrolling at the scoreboard at the very top. You literally have to go to the college baseball or the college sports scores page.
College sports scoreboard, and then go to the day. Yeah, I do it. I know.
Put a second layer of scores on your website. It's very simple. Again, you are showing this on several channels throughout the course of days on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, with some exceptions on Mondays too.
I agree. And by the way, follow the product. So college volleyball gets a lot, women's college volleyball gets a lot more coverage now than it did 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And guess what? It should.
Yep.
It's a good product. And it's only gotten better. Softball's gotten better. They're showing it more. So I don't even think that that's like DEI or some feminist movement. I think it may have been early on, but I think those products have gotten a lot better. Caitlin Clark is gaining a lot of eyeballs. She's fun to watch play basketball. She's really damn good. It's a good product. So like the product's good. Follow it, you know?
I'm glad you just mentioned Caitlin Clark because I am watching women's basketball, which look, I don't watch women's basketball. I've maybe peeked in a little bit more in terms of highlights or what's going on through headlines and whatnot, but I don't care one way or the other. So I am an unbiased observer of what is happening with women's basketball right now and the Caitlin Clark effect, first on the college game over these last couple of seasons, and now her playing in the WNBA and potentially with the U.S. women's national team at the Paris Olympics here in a couple of months. And I am watching women's basketball, and I mentioned this on the show yesterday, pull a Tom Herman, essentially, where they take the tiniest bit of goodwill, and it's like they're going out of their way to ruin that. With Caitlin Clark now being left off the Olympic roster, and there's all sorts of excuses being thrown out. Oh, the youngest woman on the roster is 25 or 26 years old, and she's 22, or it might hurt people's feelings who are tuning in just to watch her in the Olympics, and they see her sitting on the bench because she's not good enough to play just yet. Insanity to me. If you have somebody that is looked at as an important piece in the future of the sport, to at least give her the experience of being a part of that team, because you assume that in the next 4 years and probably for the next two or three Olympics after that, she will be a part of that roster, to deny that is completely ignorant right now. And I also am watching people freak out because she's not kowtowing to the political nature of that job at times, being asked about politically divisive things, and she's staying away from that. It's like she's being chastised for that unnecessarily, and it's like, didn't you learn the lesson of sports, specifically basketball, several years ago when it became too much more about that versus what was happening on the court? And that's not to say that these individuals don't have opinions, and their opinions are valuable in some way, shape, or form. But if somebody wants to say, you know what, I'm actually going to pass on that, that's not the end of the world either. That doesn't say anything about who and what they are as a person, one, but also who and what they are as a basketball player, which is supposedly the most important aspect of this with Caitlin Clark right now in the WNBA or that U.S. women's roster.
Yeah, boy, and we thought Christian Laettner got bullied on an Olympic team. You know, you can imagine with her, because I mean, yeah, right. But yeah, I mean, I see what you're saying. In marketing wise, you're totally right. I mean, of course you add her. I don't know the WNBA, so I don't know if she's one of the best players, top 12, whatever they're taking or not. Like, I mean, I really don't. I know that I've seen some clips quickly of her kind of getting, you know, they're bruising her up a little bit. I'm sorry, you know, we grew up in the NBA in the 80s. Like, you know, the best player of all time got like felonious crimes committed against him nightly, you know, when he was coming in. That'd be Michael Jordan. And so, yeah, I mean, you know, we've seen that. So I don't know that league. Marketing wise, of course you add her. And yes, you are at a spot like college baseball where you are still really trying to grow this product. And we ain't Dell yet. We're not Michael living in the car doing stuff out of the trunk, but we're in the really crappy apartment, you know, in a weird part of town.
Yeah, there's a balance to be struck there. There is a dance. You want to operate on a meritocracy, but you also want to take an opportunity when the audiences are literally tripling for each and every one of her games to say, you know what? Even if she's not going to play a ton, this will be good experience for her, but it's also a chance for people who may not be tuning in otherwise to watch the U.S. women play and go for gold in Paris here in a couple of months. It just feels like a win-win for me, and there might be some people who complain that she's not on the court enough. Who freaking cares? If that's part of your rationale, I mean, my goodness, that's like that playing scared mentality.
Yeah, it is. But I mean, you know, and here's a great preface. You always love prefaces. So, you know, I love women. Okay. It's like, here we go, you know, but they can't, you know, no, but women are just like men when they get in groups. Like, you can turn into some catty bees at times, and guys can too, by the way. You get five guys at a golf course together and they'd be, hey, here, Tim's doing, you know, it's just human nature. When you get into the bigger the group, the more crap talking or cattiness is going to be there. And that's been there with her coming into the WNBA. And I'm, you know, I don't care about that league really. So whatever. I think she's been really impressive. And that league's gotten, you know, for a subsidized league that has been on life support because the uncle had a trust fund, is actually, you know, making some waves now for the first time in 20 years, however long it's been around, which is good, you know, which is a really good thing. So, and it's a more viable product. So run with it, but running with that still, like I said, I mean, you may not be Michael Dell in a crappy apartment. You may be Michael Dell in his first home, but you ain't living off the cliff and like vacationing in Europe three months a year. You're not at that point as a company and as a product. But you're showing signs that you could really grow, but you got to put the right steps forward. And I think I agree with you, not knowing if she's one of the top players right now in the WNBA, that I would, you know, I'd add her on there, get more eyeballs on the sport. That's the key.
Yeah, the popularity feels fleeting regardless. I guess that's where it's strange to me, is that there's an assumption that the audiences will still be there regardless, but major missteps like this will cause people to tune back out. And as you just said, this is a league that for decades now has struggled for relevance. And that's not to say that the basketball hasn't been good. It's been good for what it is, but you have a chance right now to really grow things by leaps and bounds. And to make a misstep like this just seems like you are just completely smothering whatever goodwill has been built up to this point. And look, I see the WNBA doing a lot of the same things that the NBA started to do when its popularity began to wane. And that's really focus on the theatrics and the drama of it all versus the actual action on the floor. But by the same token, the NBA helped get itself more popular by doing a better job of marketing individuals. You mentioned Michael Jordan. He's obviously the greatest example in the history of the league. Bird and Magic. There are plenty of other guys really starting in the early to mid-1980s and going on through the 1990s before, unfortunately, the whole one-and-done rule, which did follow guys starting to be selected straight out of college, and there were some hits and misses there too, rendered the league a shell of itself all these years later.
When you think about like us growing up in the 80s, and our three favorite sports were football, basketball, baseball, and for me, all six, so pro and college, you more five without college baseball. You watch UT in Omaha. They're there almost every year. But like, I mean, really like treating it like you would a UT football game.
Went to two Coach Gus summer baseball camps, for the record.
Oh, God. Do you remember how hot it was? You'd see the steam coming up and off the turf, and it'd be 111, like, on the turf, and they would do these ammonia towels, wet rags, and do it all over your face. Red, who was the team physician, or the, you know, would do it. And it was, like, it was just the best thing ever. I mean, it was, like, you know, it's like getting an earache as a kid, and you get, what is it, amoxicillin, amoxicillin, and it, the pink, you know, it, they could turn that into a milkshake, and I would order it. Like, I mean, remember one time, like, I ate the whole medicine, like, you know, and one day my mom's like, no, this is over a week. What are you doing? Like, it tastes so good. Like, I thought about, you know, freezing it.
Well, they have to make the stuff that's going to eviscerate your gut microbiome taste like bubblegum, you know?
Right, exactly. No, I agree. You know, I mean, the funny thing is football's the only one who really has it figured out. So getting back to it, in the 80s, you know, we liked all six, or I liked all six, and they were pretty close in popularity because baseball was a lot more popular back then. Basketball towards the 80s, but certainly 90s, you know, had its best time ever. And then football was football. But football didn't dominate like it does now. The NFL and college football are the only marketing team that's sitting back or probably on some beach right now. I'm like, yep, this is on autopilot. Everyone else, baseball, MLB, NBA college basketball, college baseball, which has been, you know, fighting for this forever. Every other sport, WNBA is trying to figure out, and maybe international soccer. Maybe that's the other one of the other, the big trio that's sitting back and like, we're all good. We keep on gaining on y'all.
Yeah, I'm just thinking back to how it would have rated those sports back in the late 80s or early 90s. It probably went college basketball 1, NFL 2, college football 3. See, I was a big Oilers fan back then, though, and they were pretty good at that time. And Texas was a bit up and down. But, yeah, so college football 3, Major League Baseball 4, I guess. And what am I missing here? Anyhow, yeah, college baseball was not as big of a deal for me as it was for you. But even back then, there was the occasional year where Texas would make a run to Omaha, and I found myself watching. I told you this a couple months ago when you introduced me to my favorite UT baseball player of all time, Brooks Kieschnick. That was a cool moment for me because I idolized him as a kid, watching him perform at the College World Series like that, both on the mound and at the plate, too.
Yeah, happy birthday, Chemo. Had it a couple days ago, was in town, and, you know, for as great as Brooks was, he was a two-time player of the year. He was a Friday night starter, Sunday closer, and would hit four bombs during the weekend while telling you how he was doing it to the other team. Like, Brooks is as good a guy off of the field. He really is. And so for all the UT fans that love him, just know that it's even better because some people aren't, some people are, and he's one of those guys. He's just a really, really good guy. His son is actually a walk-on on the UT football team.
Oh, is that right? What position does he play?
I believe offensive line. And, yeah, so, no, Brooks was – I mean, I can't tell you how dominant he was. Bert Hooten is probably the best college pitcher, I say probably. Argue it. Go for it. Best college pitcher of all time. He was 35-3. He had a 1.14 ERA, two no-hitters. I can't imagine what his strikeout-to-walk ratio was. Invented the pitch, the knuckle curve. Threw a no-hitter his rookie year with the Cubs, I believe. But Hooten was the best. But they've had amazing pitchers. I mean, in the late 60s with Street or Gideon or, oh, God, there's someone I'm missing right now who was – just lights out. But obviously Swindell, Dressendorfer, but Kieschnick was an ace like that.
Schiraldi?
Schiraldi was the best on the 83 team, which is funny. People are always like, I can separate people who know MLB in college and the people that know both. They're like, well, who's the best college baseball player at UT ever? Is it Roger Clemens? And I'm like, dude, he was the fourth best pitcher on the team. You can say Capel and Killingsworth were 2 and 3, probably Killingsworth 2 and Capel 3 at times. Clemens was great. It was a loaded staff. They won the whole thing, and the 82 team was arguably better. And then they went to 3 straight national championship series. So, yeah, I mean, it was obviously a loaded program and loaded staff. But, yeah, I mean, he was, you know, Roger was not all that then. But, you got me off on a tangent on college baseball.
I know.
I know. And I can just tell people, like, your head may be spinning if you're still on, and I can just tell Trey's like, like, really? You know, you get him going on college baseball, which is kind of weird because, you know, we got Omaha now, and I don't want A&M to win, but I'll definitely be watching, and it's just weird not having Texas. They've been that good for that long.
Well, you definitely don't want A&M to win if the guy is Schlossnagel, because the one thing that would derail him possibly coming to Texas is him winning a national championship with A&M.
You could say the same thing with Vitello, and I agree. And you want to get everything started, whether it's, you know, portal out, portal in, recruits, signees, trying to sell them before the draft. You know, what do I want to change here? All that stuff.
I'm just trying to think. You had a college baseball video game. Was it the 85 Texas team that you recreated on that video game?
The 85 team was my favorite team of all time. I was 7. So Billy Bates, for like people my age who grew up playing baseball or loving UT in the 80s, it's amazing how many people I've run into specifically guys my age, or almost always guys my age. And it's like, you know, I heard Billy Bates is your favorite athlete. Michael Jordan's too. And they're like, I agree. You know, like he was a phenomenon. He was, because he was 5'7". He was a switch hitter. He would hit triples. He had 13 triples in 85, would hit inside the park home runs, hit bombs outside of it, would steal bags, was always sliding and dirty. The 80s Texas baseball and women's basketball programs really stole the city's heart. And it was a small city back then, too.
Billy Bates was drafted by the Reds and actually made it to the majors with the Reds, correct?
I want to say it was drafted by Milwaukee and then made it with the Reds in 90, the year they won it. Yeah, the year they swept the A's.
Well, this is
and actually was a pinch runner and scored one of the winning runs, maybe in game 3 or 4.
That's right. Well, this is a sloppy transition, but the Reds are a National League team, and the National League sucks this year, dude. Why are there only 4 teams with winning records in the National League right now?
Man, I don't know. But yeah, I mean, it's been a down year. Now, I mean, I think, I don't know if LA is one of them, but LA is going to, you know, they're going to be all right. Atlanta's had Strider and Acuna out. LA's had their own injuries. The Central, NL Central, I've never really trusted, including my Cubs. But Milwaukee's okay. The Mets are a joke, obviously. Philly's great. But some of those, you know, there'll be a couple teams that'll rehab. But it reminds you, you know, baseball, MLB's only added to the playoff, which every sport has, which it's about more money. So sometimes you should add, and I feel like in my lifetime, almost all the sports have added a little bit more, including even creating a playoff in college football. And that's been a good thing. I've been progressive on that. I've been, yes, we should do this. But then you get too big, and you only get too big because of money. You don't do it for the product. You don't do it for the betterment of the sport. And the National League is going to run into that this year, where there are going to be some teams that have no business being in the playoffs. And it makes me think about other sports that I watch. And college football is now going to be going through this, where there are going to be some years in college football playoff where you're like, there are 4, 5, 6, 7, I don't know how many teams that have no business competing for a national championship.
When you see a 3-loss team that's a part of that 12-team playoff field, it's going to make you cringe. That's a general, I mean, it's going to make you cringe, Kevin Dunn. It's going to make the general you cringe too, because how worthwhile is that team? What do those 3 losses look like? Are they an SEC team, so they're getting a little bit of a pass over a 2-loss team from another conference? 3-loss teams in the college football playoff is going to look strange, and it's going to take some getting used to also.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think a lot of us college football fans or any of any sport that are really hardcore already do that already. I mean, whether, you know, you can sort of say the Astros and stuff like that, or the Patriots, but outside of that, even Colorado in 90. I mean, you tied Tennessee with Andy Kelly, and I think they had Bienemy out. They had someone out that game. But they still tied them and then had 5 downs against Missouri. Should have been a loss. Escaped here in Austin. They had 1 loss and 1 tie, I believe. And should have been 2 losses. Well, I think about that. I mean, dude, you're 8-2-1 is what you were.
Where do you put, because growing the game is important, obviously. You want to try and get it to a wider audience if you can. But then there are taking things a step too far. So Philly and the Mets played 2 games in London this last weekend. And look, I understand international games are not just a way of the future. They are a way of the present. The NFL, for some stupid reason, decided to put a game in Brazil this upcoming season. It's one of the first games of the year, too. And it's in Sao Paulo, where apparently wearing green is a bad thing, either because of gang activity or because the rival for the local soccer team wears green. So people just don't wear green in Sao Paulo. So what does the NFL do? They have the Eagles and the Packers going up against one another, which makes no sense. Josh Jacobs, who's now the Packers running back, was on a podcast recently saying that they were told not to wear any green around that city, that they may be taking armored buses to and from places and not getting to walk around that city all that much. So there is a balance to be struck there, but it looked bizarre to me watching baseball games being played in London. And I know Bryce Harper did the soccer celebration after a home run, and guys were talking about the pros and cons and what they might be able to do better. This may turn into something where you get like four or six teams going over there over the course of a week or two, playing in like a mini tournament as part of regular season action, which for Major League Baseball, they probably do need to find more ways to shake it up to keep it interesting during the regular season, because there are so many games and it does last for literally half a year now before you get to the playoffs.
Yeah, it does. But I mean, you know, and I understand, I'm getting back to my point, if you're one of your three sports, college football, the NFL, and international soccer or football, that, they probably don't have to really be worried about. They're still going to try and grow, but it's not a problem right now.
Well, those are the ones that are actually leading the way with international games. I think it started,
which is also why they're in the position and have, like, you know, lapped the competition three times,
right?
Because they've been doing that and hiring those people for a long time.
True.
So you're right. I mean, I they're still doing it, and I think they were early on doing it. But it's okay to go over there and play. I mean, London's one thing. You bring a series over there, you know, it's kind of gimmicky, but, you know, apparently there's like a lot of, there are a couple of big Philly bars in London, like Philadelphia Phillies, probably Philly everything. But I'm like, wow. I'm like, it reminded me of living in New York. I'm like, you know, it's like, yeah, we're a Jackson State bar. I'm like, what? I mean, there's like a bar for like every, you know, team. And we actually have that in Austin now, you know, where it's like, yeah, you know, we're a big Viking, you know, Minnesota Vikings bar. I'm like, what? How the hell did that happen in North Austin?
Yeah, you and I witnessed this in different big cities, but because it is New York and Chicago and, gosh, I guess Los Angeles is probably very similar. Those are pro sports towns. Well, Los Angeles isn't really a pro sports town. It's a front runner town. But Chicago and New York are pro sports towns, so the college sports interest is very niche, but you will get those hardcore bars. Like, I'm sure you can picture a place or two that were the Longhorn centric bars near you. I had a couple of places that I would go in Chi-Town whenever Texas was decent. I mean, this is the year that they went and played the national championship against Alabama. I remember specifically where I was watching that Big 12 championship game that Texas squeaked by. And so it's not surprising to hear that London has something similar going on. That bar probably serves Philly cheesesteaks too, if I had to take a guess.
Probably does, you know, with you know, with frites, right? Or what do they call them? Chips.
Oh, free. Yeah, chips. Yep.
Yeah, but so going over there to London to try and grow the game that needs to grow. Okay, whatever. You have to have armored guards and you can't wear a color because of gang issues. All right. We may be stretching this too far. All right.
Yeah. The NFL is trying a little bit too hard there, and it's not hard to find teams without any green in their logos if you're the NFL too. That's just a damn coaching mistake by them. All right. On the Austin front, congrats to all the parents and kids out there, I guess, because an old staple from Zilker is now open once again. The Zilker Eagle Mini Train is officially back after some renovations over the last few years. You're an Austin lifer. I don't know if the Zilker Eagle Mini Train was a thing when you were a kid, but if it was, what do you think?
I mean, it wasn't called the Zilker Eagle Mini Train. It was the train Zilker. And I mean, as a little boy in the 80s, like, that was it. I mean, is that, and obviously during Christmas season and twirling around in the lights underneath. But yeah, I mean, the train was, dude, you're going over the bridge, going over the lake. I mean, you're hitting everything. It was that was big time. That was a good day.
Wait, do I actually need to take my kids on this train before they're too old to appreciate a mini train ride all around Zilker Park?
Absolutely. And Calvin may not be, but Viv may, as smart as she is, may already be there, dude.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I would do it like tomorrow. Take them on. I mean, I'm sure the train, you know, probably is asking them, you know, all types of weird questions that you should never talk to a kid about, you know, that's happening now apparently in schools. I wouldn't know, but I'm like, whoa, my parents wouldn't have been happy about that. So there may be some pronoun stuff on there, but I'm sure really trying to get them a certain mental direction, but they'll enjoy the ride.
Well, there is a rainbow strip on the very bottom of the Zilker Eagle mini train, so yeah, it's debatable. I hate how divisive the rainbow has become, by the way, but you can't help but ask that question if you just see it on the train.
I do too, because growing up in Austin, I saw that a lot in Austin, and it was like a good thing. It was like gay pride. It's like, yeah, you get, you know, everyone deserves rights, and you know, gay people I knew were really cool. So I'm like, well, what are you doing here, you know? And then all of a sudden it's turned, I mean, a lot of stuff has turned divisive. I mean, the American flag is, and I get that for a long time, but still, like, it's almost like there's so much reading going into, like, just the symbol. And it's like, hey, man, this started as, you know, support gay people. Is that the end of the world?
No, it's not. And whenever I wear my reading rainbow shirt around, because you know I'm a big reader, I always get looks from people like, is that guy gay? And you know what? If you want to consider me gay, good for you. By the way, oh, I'm glad I just thought of this because this was not planned for today's show, but it'll provide you with a little bit of amusement, you, Kevin, if nothing else, even if it's a esoteric humor here. So we were driving through our neighborhood a little bit earlier today after I picked the kids up from their summer camp, and every day we pass by this house, and this house has become a beacon for LGBTQ symbolism in the neighborhood. It's the one house that does this, but it started out with a rainbow flag, which, by the way, the LGBTQ flag, somebody needs to get together and do something different. That flag looks like somebody vomited on it. I expect something that looks a little bit better than that. But it started out with a flag. And now there's the mailbox is painted rainbow. And then there's some other pretty massive rainbow symbol that's on the house somewhere. And so we were driving by it today, and my kids almost in unison looked at it, and they're like, wow, Dad, I guess they're gay, huh? And I'm like, I don't know. Like, I understand why you're making that assumption. Like, they could just be somebody who is desperate to make sure that that everybody knows exactly how they feel about a particular issue, but there's a reason why I don't wear my feelings on my sleeve or on my license plate or on the flag out front of our house, because we feel how we feel, and it's not necessarily everybody else's business, but that person wants to make it everybody else's business, so good for them.
Yeah, I mean, maybe HOA, so you can't do that, whatever, but, you know, and not because of the flag, but because of the colors. But yeah, I mean, who cares? I mean, what Calvin texted me on this, and he did tell me that what he didn't tell you was the sex toys that were lined up as reindeer in the lawn was kind of a giveaway, too. So he may not be the Columbo you think he is, right?
Which sadly he learned in second grade, apparently, all about those sex toys. But then again, that would have been part of his education at the University of Texas, if he makes it that far.
Oh, I thought he knew about Columbo. Then I was like, be great, the one eye, you know. Hey, let me go and figure this out. So, yeah.
No, that.
Oh, so, anything else with Mrs. Schneider?
That imitation only works when the person who is listening to you can also see your face, because your face is better than how you sound with whatever it is that you're saying.
It works better. It also gets me more angry texts and tweets and, you know, emails saying, you know, that's unfair. I'm like, wow. I mean, you know, Peter was successful.
I guess Texans are celebrating right now because the largest Buc-ee's in the world, which are there Buc-ee's outside of Texas? The largest Buc-ee's in Texas, largest Buc-ee's in the world. Is it opening up in Luling? Look, we all have these things that citywide, regionally, we overrate. I'm sorry to break it to you, Texans, and I know some of you are going to break into a fit of rage right now. you overrate Buc-ee's by just a little bit. It's like Walmart had a baby with a gas station. I understand it's impressive for a gas station. It's still an oversized gas station, though.
Trey, you're one of us, though. You are a Texan, born and raised.
One of us.
Like, you Texas. Like, so we're talking to our own people here.
We're talking to our own people. We're trying to have a little bit of an intervention. I understand you're amazed by the jerky wall, and it looks a little bit like a Cracker Barrel on one side of the store. I've only been to one Buc-ee's in my life. I don't need to go back to another one. I got the gist of it. I get it that they have a bunch of gas pumps, and maybe the gas is a couple of cents cheaper than at the place across the street, which is a good reason to go to that gas station. I will give you that, but we've got to just pump the brakes on all the Buc-ee's love. It's just a freaking gas station, people.
It is. It's very tribal, and Texans are like that. It's one of the things I love about Texans. And once again, Trey and I are born and raised here, so we are that. But you get it with Whataburger and different spots that are also good. And I would say Buc-ee's, like, for you've been around the country, for most gas stations, are you kidding me? Now, I don't want to go to a Buc-ee's off 290 on the way to Houston on a Saturday at 1:30 because that is an S show, and I don't want to deal with it. It's not worth it for me there. But the amount of selection they have, I have gotten, like, chocolate pretzels there. I have gotten some of their baked goods. I do love the fact that the bathrooms are always very clean. You ever been to a Texaco in 1984 in Harlingen?
Okay, that is the one thing that
I'll give you some appreciation there, all right?
That's the one thing that I'll give you with the Buc-ee's. If the bathrooms are as clean as everybody says, then yes, Buc-ee's deserves a ton of credit for that, because that is revolutionizing the gas station experience. Everything else you just mentioned, though, I can find in a regular gas station. And that's the thing for me. I don't want to linger in a gas station.
Everything, Trey, right?
I don't want to linger in a gas station any longer than I have to. There are gas stations in Ellinger. There's Haruska's Bakery. You can find great baked goods there, just like you can at a Buc-ee's. Buc-ee's has their wall of nuts, this lauded wall of nuts. I was a little bit underwhelmed by the wall of nuts, if I'm being completely honest. Almost as underwhelmed as I was the wall of jerky, too. But yes, they have those things, and maybe they have a little bit more of a selection than you get at your usual gas station. And yes, I understand they have all sorts of cool wicker furniture and things that you can use for camping and this or that. There are other places that you can get those things that doesn't require you to spend any more time at a gas station than you have to.
Well, it's what most of the Kardashians have been told by their therapist. You got the wrong nuts.
None of them were dry roasted. They were all oil roasted. And that's a part of my diet Nazi problem, I guess.
I wasn't talking about the color of the nuts necessarily.
Mm.
More the taste. But no, I know what you're saying. I mean, you know, Whataburger is better than most, like, state burger places that are chains than in most states. Now, that could be different with the Chicago company running it. Now, I haven't been there in a long time.
I've heard from people whose opinions I trust on these things that it is.
I have too. So yeah, I mean, we're going to have pride in it, and it's why college sports has done, you know, been so successful and made so much money, is because people have a lot of pride. And you see that, I mean, getting 100,000 people in 98 degree weather to go out and spend a bunch of money for the city way before the game, tailgate, spend a bunch of money for parking and tickets and beers and hot dogs and, hey, I'm going to get a suite here. I'm going to put down 100K, you know, like, think about that. You know, I mean, there's just a lot of tribalism and pride, and it's just what makes us humans. Now, you have to still keep that and not go overboard. And so that may be kind of with some of the people that are, like, just over the top. Like, I mean, I really did miss Whataburger in New York, but I will say this, I missed Maudie's Queso.
You know what I missed in Chicago that I haven't even really shopped at all that often here and back in Texas again? H-E-B. Because the grocery stores in Texas are way better than they were in Chicago. And by the way, you mentioned 100,000 people sitting in the 100-degree heat to watch a football game. People are doing that throughout the summer in lines for these fast food burgers. Whether you're talking about a Whataburger, a P. Terry's, an In-N-Out burger, people are sitting in their cars in a 30-minute line. When it's 100 degrees right. outside, the heat index is like 115 for some fast food. They could actually cut that time down by, I don't know, a third to a half by parking their car, getting out of the car, just going in and ordering. But they're content sitting in that line. Why? I don't know. Maybe tribalism is a part of it.
Yeah, laziness is on that factor, too. I mean, because I'll never wait in a car line. I don't care how hot it is, because you're walking from AC to AC. If I could just go inside and order.
Yeah, I've got a line abhorrence. It's not as unhealthy or healthy as my foot abhorrence, but I have an abhorrence to standing in line for just about anything. And food is maybe at the top of that list, especially something like barbecue or burgers here in Texas, because there is some place that I can guarantee you the quality is just as good that doesn't require you to wait in a 30-minute, 45-minute, hour, three-hour line to get barbecue or a fast food hamburger.
Yeah, I will be curious kind of where everything goes. Supply chain seems to have gotten better. I'm certainly no expert in that. You know, the news about interest cuts are good if it happens, and I'm sure it will, but when...
They keep pushing that can down the road. It was supposed to happen in the first quarter of this year. Now they're talking about maybe doing it in by the end of the summer, right?
Yeah, I mean, because I think they're still battling inflation and things that are certainly way above my pay grade, but I know enough about that you know, Jerome Powell or any of them with the feds, I mean, they're trying to do this the right way and balance it. I mean, I truly believe that. I don't believe in politicians, but you know, maybe this is the last, you know, truism that I believe where it's going to be broken. And I'm like, none of this is real. But yeah, I mean, hopefully we're going to get to that point and things will, you know, hopefully turn around a little bit.
Perhaps. And with that, we are through another edition of Great Kevin Dunn joining me for the full hour here on Sports Day Plus. KD, thank you as always for the time, my friend.
Thanks, buddy.
Thanks to you for tuning in. Back tomorrow at 6. That includes a multi-segment conversation with Justin Wells of Inside Texas. Until then, have yourselves a great rest of the evening and hook 'em.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elliott.